Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
What's up, you bunch of damn sailors? We're back, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, for the 44th rendition of In the Jar with your boy Dupe. It's been going on, man. I had a hell of a little weekend trip. I know we're getting this episode off a little late, but this past weekend, man... Went to Nashville, Tennessee for about, 14 hours. I waited too damn long to book my flight. And so the only option, my buddy had an engagement party. Dear friend of mine has an engagement party. He rented out a whole joint. And he's been a hell of a friend to me. So I told him, I said, I'll make it happen. I'll be there for your engagement party. And I waited until like 10 days before the date of the engagement party to book my flight. Now, normally I prefer Delta. I prefer American. But there was nothing on either airline to Nashville, Tennessee for the dates I needed. That was under $600, $700, all the way up to $1,000. Your boy ain't got that for a damn 12-hour trip. You just don't. And it wouldn't have been a 12-hour trip if I had booked on Delta or American. But you guys could probably see where this is going. I book my flight there on Frontier, okay? The Frontier flight leaves on November 15th at 6 p.m. Okay. It goes to Denver. I got to turn Do Not Disturb on here. Okay. So the flight's got a connection in Denver. Okay. You land in Denver around 8 p.m., 9 p.m. Mountain Time, right? My connecting flight to Nashville was not until 12 p.m. on Saturday. So, your boy got an Airbnb in Denver. And cool thing about that is I get in the Uber from the airport. I made a stop before going to my Airbnb to get some of that Colorado medicine. Every time I go, I got to try, you know, some of the best herb I've ever had is in Colorado. So every time I go to Colorado, I stop for some medicine, you know what I'm saying? So I added that stop, and then I add my Airbnb. I get a little room in this lady's house. And I hop into Uber, and the guy's got an accent. He's got like a foreign accent. So I say, well, where are you from? He goes, well, I grew up in Brazil. And so automatically I'm like, oh, dude, they teach you like jujitsu in school, don't you? Don't they? And he was like, yeah. So we started talking about that. I asked him about, there's some kind of tradition in Brazil. It's called Vale Tudo, where in Brazil, there are people that will, Vale Tudo, I believe, is Portuguese for like street fight. And so in Brazil, they will literally have Vale Tudo matches, and there are people that organize them, and it's basically MMA barefisted, no protection, nothing, like just mano a mano in a damn alleyway in Brazil or on the street. People watch. I guarantee you they bet on it. So we're talking about all this, and literally in Brazil, a part of, and I knew this before, I was just asking this guy about his experience with it, and all of it was confirmed, that they, like, jiu-jitsu is part of, like, the schooling program there. And I think that's real neat, because I could be more, could be more consistent with my jiu-jitsu regimen. But, I mean, you know, I make sure and get to MMA class every week. And that's, jiu-jitsu's incorporated. I'd say I've learned some jiu-jitsu, not as much as I could, but some going to MMA class and training some on the ground, okay? It teaches you so much about, like, what's real, okay? Because you go in there and you're not tuned up, like, you're going to get a heavy dose of reality fast. And conjunctly, you also learn how to solve problems in real time, right? You don't just work with your body, you work with your mind. Sometimes you work with your soul if you're really going with someone that's really good, and they kind of start to get you in a damn mental torture chamber. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, you got to find that. Sometimes you got to find that resolve in your soul. So I think that's really neat that in Brazil they teach jiu-jitsu as a part of, like, same as they teach, like, English class. Maybe not in Brazil, they probably don't have English class, but you know what I mean? Social studies, math, whatever. Jiu-jitsu is taught just like any of those other subjects. And frankly, I think American kids could really benefit from getting that in their curriculum. But I digress. So we hit it off talking about that. This was like it was 11 minutes to the dispo and then another like 10 minutes to my Airbnb. So like I got to spend, you know, maybe 20 minutes with this guy, and he proceeds to tell me how he's a chef. He spent time in France, spent time in Italy, and now he's in Denver because he partnered up with an American guy, and they have a restaurant or whatever. So we were talking about healthy ways to cook food, because that's something. Basically, we talked about three things, me and this Brazilian guy in the Uber on a Friday night in Denver. You know, we talked about jits, talked about food. We talked about how I asked him, I was like, dude, one of the main realizations I've come to in eating good is what you cook stuff in is one of the most important things. He goes, you're absolutely right. And I was like, fuck yeah. Little dopamine hit. You know what I'm saying? Being right about something, especially when you're kind of asking someone that you trust. And here's the thing. All these things I talked to this guy about were, he was like the source to talk to about, right? Somebody grows up in Brazil, you're probably going to be able to talk to him about jiu-jitsu. They're probably going to be really familiar with that. Talking to a chef, he's probably going to be really familiar with all the all the questions I have, all the assumptions I've made about what it means to eat clean. So I asked him, I was like, dude, I've been cooking pretty much everything in ghee, G-H-E-E. It's clarified butter. I don't know the particulars of ghee, but basically what I understand about it is that you, in making the clarified butter, you're basically distilling all the bad stuff out of it, all the free radicals out of it, all the processed factors out of it, okay, to the point where it's only the, this is what this guy told me, to the point where it's only the good nutrients in the butter. Because here's the thing, like, if I took some, like, beautiful, which is, this is what I eat, beautiful, like, grass-fed ground bison or grass or ground venison or, you know, some really good stuff, organic potatoes, whatever it is, sweet potatoes, broccoli, any of it. If I took those good foods and I cooked them in canola oil, I'm completely undermining the nutritional benefits from cooking it in that canola oil, from cooking it in, you know, what's something else, but any vegetable oil or something like that, right? Olive oil's good, is what I understand. I don't know about avocado oil. I used to think it was good. I'm not really sure anymore. Probably is. But basically, this guy told me, I don't know if this guy was just telling me what I wanted to hear or if you boys on the right path, because he told me, he said, ghee is probably the best thing in terms of nutrient density that you could cook your food in. I was like, fuck yeah, dude. We eating good, baby. On a budget, too, you know? I got a pretty good routine going, man, of just knowing what I eat in a week, knowing what I like to eat, and then just buying things that, you know, won't get wasted. And I'm pretty happy about that. But, you know, I digress. We talked about food. And then eventually, at the end of the conversation, I told him, I said, what's your experience with ayahuasca? And he goes, well, I grew up in an indigenous tribe that I got to close the damn window, dude. Jasper! You can't bark like that while I'm shooting a podcast, dude. Take your seat. Have you listen. Oh, shit. So I asked this guy, I say, what you do with ayahuasca? He grew up in an indigenous tribe that has made a tradition of steeping the tea, as you would say, for centuries. Stop, man. What are you barking at? Stop. And I was like, look, man, I'm interested in going on a retreat like that at some point. I said, as somebody that hasn't done it, how could you bring me into the fold on understanding what it's like? Because I'm interested. And he says, well, have you done mushrooms before? I said, yes, sir. He goes, okay. Here's the thing about the mushrooms. You can control those. And I was like, really? I didn't feel that way. He said, the ayahuasca, you can't control it. You have to let go and let it take control. He said, the ayahuasca is the best way to connect with the universal mind or God, whatever you believe that creating entity to be. He said the ayahuasca is the best way to reconnect with the universal mind. And what's crazy is that I was not 30 minutes before this conversation, I was, excuse me, sitting on a plane reading about the universal mind. It's a master key system by Charles F. Hunnell. Okay. I figured out about this book on Tim Ferriss's Tribe of Mentors. Terry Crews recommended this book and says that he reads it once a month. So I bought the book on Kindle and I was reading it on a flight. And I literally 30 minutes before this random conversation with a stranger in an Uber was reading about the universal mind. And then word for word, when he's talking about the ayahuasca, he says it's the best way to connect with the universal mind. So I'm sitting here having this, like, I don't want to call it deja vu, just like one of those weird moments in time where you kind of know that you're around the right person, you're digesting the right information because it's all converging on you in the same period of space and time. And so eventually I got this guy's info, and apparently he goes on retreats in Nevada twice a year with a
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
A group of people that is
stop, man.
With a group of people that's apparently indigenous and trusted.
Stop growling, man. Come on, brother. Ain't nobody gonna hurt you.
So anyway, it was a cool trip. Obviously, get to Nashville. Spend time with most of my best friends in the world. And that was really cool to reconnect with a lot of guys that, me living in Phoenix, I don't really get the chance to see but a couple times a year. Some of them I ain't seen for a long time. So yeah, man, that's a cool weekend. That's what's going on. Sorry about the dog barking. This is the 44th episode, man, in the jar. We're 8 weeks away from being at a year of doing this show every week. And, you know, I'm feeling grateful. There's some other stuff going on in my life right now. I'm going through a breakup right now. So, you know, it's a blessing that we're here, baby. It's a blessing that we're making it happen today. I really like the way I had a lot of fun on the show last week. Going through X, kind of just, you know, looking at stuff that has struck me during the week. I also noticed on X, this is the platform I spend the most time on. I can't have Instagram on my phone. I can't have TikTok on my phone. I just waste too much time. I enjoy it too much. And, you know, we're all starting to understand that too much time spent on especially the short form social media, it ain't good. So for the sake of my schedule, the sake of my time, I don't scroll Instagram, but I keep X. I don't know why. And I probably waste more time than I should on there. But I was thinking, man, so I was trying to tie it all in there and notice my brain going all over the place. Anyway, I have X. I spend some time on it. And this week I noticed that there is a new feature on there called the NFL portal. It's powered by Intel. So instead of pulling all this shit together for the show in advance, I figured we just hop on and take a look at what's going on in real time. And then maybe we'll go through the bookmarks. There's some like other unrelated juice, but I want to scratch the NFL itch, you know, on every episode. Maybe let's see if there's a college football portal too. Probably not. Let's see. No college football portal. Okay. That'd be a cool suggestion for Mr. Elon Musk to get there's an NFL portal on X. But it'd be cool if there was a college football portal. Okay. So let me Chromecast this screen here. Okay. Can y'all see that? Y'all should be able to see that. Okay. So, first clip of the week. Let's do it. Mike McDaniel isn't letting his get back guy push him around.
Was your favorite character in as a kid Eeyore?
Somebody's chewing aggressively.
Since you're out of timeouts, you have to stay in the box now.
But dude, I love hanging out with you.
Dude, people, I know it's been like a thing in football where, you know, the get back guy is starting to get, you know, a little bit more notoriety on each sideline. The get back guy is so important. Here's the thing about a get back guy on a football team sideline. It can't be a guy that's not an alpha. It just can't. It has to be an enforcer within the group that people like. I don't want to say that people respect. Hopefully you respect everybody in your building, but it's a guy that won't take no shit, and everybody has to know that. Because sometimes, like, the head coach gets into it, he's screaming, he's yelling, maybe a bad call is made, and he's running out there when he can't. And you have to have the get back guy that's like, stop. Yo, stop. Like, literally grab him by the back of his shirt and pull him in. Be like, yo, dude, fuck off. Quit. You know what I'm saying? Right there. You know, that guy's bald. He's probably jacked. He might be in the strength and conditioning department. That's normally the get back guy. You know, only thing missing is a full ass beard. Same with your boy. What else? Okay. This looks like just a feed from all the teams. Okay, so obviously it looks like we got 49ers Packers coming up in Lambeau. I bet that's going to be a cold one. Dak Prescott hurt. Okay. We got Browns Steelers. Okay, what here's okay. This will be good. So, what is the deal? I'm sure I'm the thousandth person to ask this. What is the deal with this character? That's like this character has literally emerged on social media within the past like 72 hours as of us shooting this. This little character here is just a chill guy. Just a chill guy. I want to know who created this. It's obviously a graphic designer of some kind. I would think, I mean, is he a dog? Is he an anteater? Is he from, what's that damn cartoon? Arthur? I don't know, man. Let me see. Arthur cartoon. Okay, give me something here. That guy. Yeah, that's kind of what it reminds this meme. That's kind of what it reminds me of. But it's also very different. So I'm trying to think what else. It's like, I don't know. I don't really understand it, but I feel like that's part of the allure. You know what I mean? Is that people are like, what is this? I don't get it. He's just a chill guy. Just hanging out. He's got like a, you know, yeah, type of smirk on his damn mug. You know what I mean? He's like, yeah, whatever happens, happens. I think it's a reflection of our generation's approach to mental health, especially as it pertains to like men's mental health, where it's like, if you want to do well in life, you kind of just got to be like this guy, which is a guy that kind of lets things roll off your shoulder. Kind of lets problems roll off of you like a damn raindrop on a rain jacket. You know, that's this guy. He's just a chill guy. He's got his damn Steelers hat on. He's waiting for Thursday night football, Browns, Steelers. And it's interesting how these social media teams in the NFL pick up on stuff like this. It's almost becoming a little cliche for an NFL team to pick up on a trend like this one. They always do it. It used to just be like the Chargers social media team that was really fast and good on these things. But now I feel like the LA Chargers social media team kind of set the precedent for the social media groups throughout the league. And so now, like, I saw the Colts do something with this morning. I'm sure there's a couple other teams that have. We might see them on this feed. But it's just a chill guy, you know. I don't think anyone else has a better explanation for it either. But I guess that'd be a good... We're kind of jumping all over the place. I guess that'd be a good segue. I've been listening to Modern Wisdom a lot. This guy, Chris Williamson, is a really great podcaster. They've been going for like 700-plus episodes. Don't grip life so tightly. Being too serious creates a kind of brittle fragility, which a playful attitude insulates you against. Your goal is dynamic persistence over the long term. Taking things seriously gives you a huge advantage in bursts, but chronic seriousness makes you rigid and at risk of blow up. What would this be like if it was 10% more enjoyable? So I'll stop there. This resonated with me as a man because your boy chronically throughout the course of his life has taking stuff too serious. And it's the way you think a man is supposed to operate in this world. It's like constantly like, I'm going to tough it out. And what this is saying is, dude, if you want to keep showing up to what you got to show up to, you got to make it a little more fun. How do you make it a little more fun? You make it a little more playful. Make a sense of humor your default emotion, Matthew McConaughey. And McConaughey was on Modern Wisdom podcast recently, and it's where he said this. And it's like McConaughey was talking about how when something difficult arises in his life, maybe it's an inconvenience, maybe it's a, you know, a chronic problem, maybe it's an issue in a relationship, whatever. McConaughey said that, like, the more we can just kind of, like, the more you can respond to a situation that way, the better life's going to turn out. And like I said, I'm going through a breakup, and there were times, man, where, you know, she and I would be in the thick of it, you know, disagreeing, arguing, fighting. And I would just, like, all of a sudden get the urge to laugh. And I don't, it wasn't out of disrespect, which is how she interpreted it. It was more so out of, like, how in the hell did we get here, brother? You know what I mean? Like, how did we digress so fast? And so McConaughey talked about that on the podcast, where he was like, dude, sometimes you get in a situation and it's serious like that, and you laugh, and the other person might take it as, like, condescending or disrespectful. And it's like, no, like, I'm just seeing the humor in a tough situation. It's like, oh, shit, you know, you're having a bad day, you spill your damn tea all over the place or your damn coffee all over the floor, and it's like, you know what I mean? I'm trying to, like, I'm not an actor. I'm trying to, like, sell a good laugh here. I don't know if it was good or not. But, okay, don't be so worried about winning that you forget what winning is supposed to feel like. Is your presiding feeling when things go well one of happiness and satisfaction, or one of relief? Is it joy or simply the abatement of fear? I hear a lot of fighters talk about how when they come out with the win, it's like a sense of relief. And fighting is probably one of the, especially if you're fighting for a living, it's probably one of the most stressful occupations a man can take on. And so I get why somebody might feel relief after a dub. But this paragraph is advising.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
Against that. And in some, like, fighting, it might be impossible to, you know, have that presiding feeling of happiness and satisfaction. Jasper. Come on, man. After a while of winning, you realize that how you win is more important than if you win. How you feel during the event is more important than the outcome of the event. How the people who read your work are impacted is more important than how many are impacted. That's all we're trying to do at this show. We don't have many viewers at this point, but I hope that the viewers we do have, that this show makes a drastic positive impact on your week. You know, that's what keeps us showing back up. It's like, if we get 5 views and we divinely touch 2 souls, like, that's enough to keep the boy coming back. You know what I mean? Do not be so terrified of failing that even the act of winning is made miserable. Ultimately, you're doing things not to say you've done them, but for the experience of having done them. When you look back, it's the experience itself, not just the outcome, that matters. And the thing about it is, man, is, like, the successful men you see in your newsfeed when you open up Instagram or Twitter, they're all doing high stakes work. That's why they're in front of a lot of people, because people see that journey and they see the highs. Sometimes they see the lows, especially if it's an athlete. And they admire that. They admire somebody for going through something hard like that publicly. But with high stakes comes the temptation to be fearful, the temptation to think about the downside of what you're doing, the temptation to, especially in lucrative, competitive, I don't know if lucrative is the right word, competitive spaces like the NFL or like YouTube or like the UFC. When you're in those competitive spaces, I feel like it's really easy. Sales, anything like that that's a little high pressure, stakes are high. You start to get a little, at least for me, like in those situations, like selling in the NFL, like I was terrified to fail. And that drove me to get done what I needed to get done a lot of days, but it was also really exhausting, and it wasn't evergreen. You know what I mean? It wasn't sustainable for 5 or 10 years, which is realistically how long it takes to build something. One of the big determining factors in how you feel will be the outcome, but it's not everything. Oddly enough, optimizing for how you feel detaches you from caring about outcomes, but is the very thing that drives outcomes the most. And if it doesn't, what do you care? You're enjoying it. Wow, dude. I mean, I feel like I kind of want to add something to that, but I feel like it just says enough as it is. Emotional pain is a hell of a teacher, but it won't kill you. Would life be easier if you didn't feel everything so very deeply? Perhaps. But the only reason you're getting the outcomes that you want is because of your depth of thought. It's almost like that paradox of life where the more you're attached to a certain outcome, the more elusive that outcome becomes. The more attached you are to getting views on YouTube, the less views you're probably going to get. The more attached you become to keeping that girl in your life, the more she's probably going to say, I'm good. You know, so it's like an ironic paradox of life. It's like attachment, and it's human nature to like sink our claws into like whatever we want and really try and let that desire fuel us. But if we allow that desire to consume us, that's when it becomes a problem. As bad as it feels, this is the breadth of human experience. You are alive. Your inner landscape is a fascinating world to explore. Act with curiosity. What you are doing right now is a hypothesis to be tested, not an ideology to be proved. Is your goal to survive or thrive or flourish? You are doing this for you. After a certain level of material comfort, the only person you need to do this for is you. Your conscience knows when you're being honest and not. Optimize to make him happy. Be the person your mom thinks you are. Be the person your younger self wanted as a role model. Brave, courageous, earnest, honest, virtuous, flaming. And that's how we measure out our real respect for people. By the degree of feeling they can register, the voltage of life they can carry and tolerate and enjoy. End of sermon. As Buddha says, Live like a mighty river. And as the old Greek said, live as though all your ancestors were living again through you. Ted Hughes via Bisakan Virasami. So maybe that's what that chill guy embodies. You know what I'm saying? All right, let's go back to the NFL portal, huh? Here he is. I didn't understand this angry run. I don't get that. I saw that a couple times today. Taysom Hill, bro.
For Taysom Hill, right side. Taysom still on his feet. Taysom 2015. See you later, bye. Taysom Hill. What a day. Taysom ring four. Jameis in the middle of the pocket, but he's in trouble. And he walks right into the arms of Carl Granderson, who slings him to the ground. Saints defense coming up big.
It's kind of fire, dude. Taysom Hill, I think, went for like 41 fantasy points this last week. Guy was absolutely balling and continues. Taysom Hill, I saw a discussion about this. Taysom Hill might be like, if he was playing in like the 1930s, 1940s, we'd be talking about him for the rest of ever. He would have been the greatest athlete to have ever existed if he had played back then. Think he's low-key one of the greatest jackknifes, if not the greatest jackknife player in NFL history, Taysom Hill. I saw this too. This is going viral. Power ranking NFL animal teams by who would win in a fight. My Bengals are up there at number two. I don't know. Would you... The edge of the Bengal tiger over the lion, and then the lion over the jaguar, and then the jaguar over the panther is interesting to me. Okay, because you got the silhouette of each animal here. The Bengal tiger definitely looks the stoutest. Okay, and from what I understand about Bengal tigers is that they're also the meanest. I don't know. I'd put it, I don't know, man. You got all these birds in here. I feel like a cardinal's less dangerous than a dolphin, bro. Unless they're in a group. If they're in a group, they could smoke you. Ravens are actually pretty big. I see them around in the desert a lot. They're pretty big. And I always think if a raven like chose to like dive bomb my ass, like it wouldn't be fun. Osprey, I'm not familiar. Falcon and Eagle. Now, those two guys could be dark horses. If you had a group of Eagles or Falcons against a young horse, they could definitely smoke that. But I don't really know. Like, I would guess that with these larger animals like the grizzly and the Bengal, like, it's one guy. Okay? But, and I think this debate's probably about a single animal. But if you had a group of these birds, they might be able to take out any of these Johns, grizzly bear aside. Grizzly bear, like, he's gonna get the dub most of the time. He's going to get the dub. Now, Bengal versus lion versus jaguar versus panther, maybe you could, like, seed that up, okay? So, like, a Bengal versus a panther, and then a lion versus a jaguar, and then whoever comes out on top in those matchups gets to fight for that number two spot beneath the grizzly. I don't know. I feel like those big cats is kind of a toss-up. You know what I mean? Okay, I feel like I've beaten that horse dead. Yeah. All right. Let's see, man. I might move on if we don't find something else soon here. To the bookmarks, I mean. The dog pound. Okay. Kirby Joseph has had a hell of a season for the Lions. Kirby Joseph is a former volleyball player, and everybody on the Detroit Lions staff raves about how this guy just rolls down and hits. Okay. I thought Xavier McKinney was the leader for a hot minute. I feel like that guy had a pick in every game for like the first couple weeks of the season. But Kirby Joseph is a league leader right now at 7. I think Kirby Joseph went to Illinois. I might be wrong. But he might, other than Aiden Hutchinson, who's obviously out, like Kirby Joseph might be the best player on that Detroit Lions defense in terms of playmaking, in terms of all-around skill set. You know what I'm saying? Burrow would be the consensus best QB in the world. This is from Pluto Cooked. Bengals account for sure. Burrow would be the consensus best QB in the world if the Bengals had a positive record. Let's look. That play was a hell of a play. And here's the thing I've noticed about Burrow the last couple games too. Burrow has been like, the Bengals offensive line is so bad. Okay. You got two guys on the interior, Cordell Volson and Ted Karras, who are, I think it's 67 and maybe, I know 67 and 61, maybe. I don't know. These guys on the Bengals offensive line, they ain't even worth knowing at this point. Like, Cordell Volson and Ted Karras are, I think, according to Pro Football Focus, rated at the very bottom in terms of pass rush win rate, meaning they've gotten beat more than they have held up. And so Burrow's had to have, at least it seems, in the last 3 or 4 weeks, one of these moments a game where he is not, like you see on the first contact here, it takes one contact. Well, yeah. I was going to try and count the amount of tackles he broke, but he only broke one. But you had two or three guys, one, two, three guys that could have made a play there, and Burrow evades and gets out of there and makes a good throw out of it. He's had to make some of those plays. And I think, you know, I said this in the group chat the other day, and I'm a Bengals fan, so I'm really biased. I'm this close to, like, not watching this team anymore. I'm this close. I probably will regardless, but, like, Burrow's had to make one or two of these plays every week. And we haven't seen this from him. You know, I think people are surprised by his resolve in getting out of a dirty pocket and making a good throw. He did it against the Eagles, I believe. He's done it once or twice. I think he did it a couple times against the Ravens. Like, this guy is pressured at a crazy rate because the offensive line is so terrible, because the Bengals front office has just overlooked that, as they have many things. But Bengals got to win out in order to have a chance to go to the postseason. I don't see it happening, but crazier things have happened, right? Okay, we just read that. This guy's cool. This guy, I just found out about this morning. This is a whole thread. You know, I don't know if we got time for it. Yeah, I mean, maybe we come back to it. But this guy's, like, crazy. Entrepreneur, hangs out with David Goggins, trained for, like, a month straight with Navy SEALs. This is, like, a whole thread of, like, him saying stuff. Let's see. This might be the clip of the week. Let's watch it. This looks like my boy JJ.
$1 lemonade. What do you have?
Lemonade on the rock.
Coming right up.
Thanks.
I'll have a tea salad. Thanks.
Alright, I gotta get back to the wife.
This lemonade's incredible. What's the secret ingredient?
Piss.
What's it take to work in a place like this?
I don't know. I'd have to run it through corporate.
Well, can I get an application?
Nah, that's all kind of online.
Just give me a shot.
Brooke, it's not going to work, okay? There's the door.
Hey, maybe one day. Taxi.
Weird clip, man. I don't even have anything to say. It's just a weird clip, you know. Looks like my boy JJ, that main character in that thing. But it's like, how do people even come up with stuff like that? You know what I mean? I swear people just got to have, like, a dream like that, and then they wake up and they immediately, like, record the idea or something, and then they go make the video. That's the only, like, psychedelics or dreams. Like, that's the only way I can think of a video like that being conceived for real. Oh, this one, man, that's my boy. This guy knows ball, okay? This guy is the guy that that does, like, sirens, and he'll be like, people like Photoshop him onto like a stadium, and it'll be like me on third down, and it'll be like Clemson's damn stadium. It'll be like, it's third down. Like, that guy's That guy knows ball, okay? He understands the game. He clearly understands the game here, okay? And it's a fan of his, got in the picture, take it with me, and here it is, okay? That guy knows ball. Man. This kid, okay. So check this shit out. This kid created his own coin. It's like a 10-year-old kid. You see him? And he pumped the shit out of this coin. I don't know how he did it. He was on a live stream, obviously, doing this right now.
He doesn't even know what's going on.
How can you hit it?
Wait, what?
Kid runs away with 30K. Dumps it.
Wait, what?
He said, wait,
wait, what? I'm so confused.
What? Oh, it was nuked. Why is it nuked?
No way. Oh, holy fuck! Holy fuck!
You fool, kid.
Holy fuck, thanks for the 20 bandos.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Yo, what the fuck? What the fuck? Nah, bro.
Gen Z fucker, dude. Okay, so, yeah, this kid, apparently this kid's stake in whatever coin he created, so he pumped it up, he was happy with a 30K gain, and he dumps it all. And apparently, if this kid hadn't have dumped his coin, he would have had like millions. I don't know the exact amount, but it was like 2 million or something like that. So, paper hands, number one. But number two, I've been seeing a lot of this as Bitcoin's been soaring. And this is not advice, by the way. This is just my outlook on things. Bitcoin's been soaring. Other cryptos have benefited. Ethereum has not. Ethereum's been around where it's been at. But it's like you see stories like this with this kid. It made a coin. The value is rooted in basically nothing. Runs away with a bag. And could have run away with a lot bigger bag. But I saw a tweet. And it was this guy's TikTok feed. And every single video in this guy's feed was of like some crypto creator talking about how they ran off with a bag on some shit coin. It's really concerning to me. It's really concerning to me. I remember the last like bull run we had back in like 2020, 2021. I was just getting into the investment world and I started having friends texting me, friends that I wasn't really close with, you know, buddies maybe, colleagues even. Texting me and saying, hey, I'm thinking about buying Peloton stock. What do you think? And that just was an indicator to me that like the common man, not to sound condescending either, but when somebody that doesn't know a lot about markets is going around asking people like, hey, like, what do you think about, you know, this shit coin? It's going off. That's generally a bad sign for the market. And maybe just like what happened in 2020, like Peloton got absolutely destroyed. I've never owned that stock. I probably won't ever. It's too volatile. But it's like, dude, we're at a time where greed is high. And if you know the quote from the investing goat, Warren Buffett, when people are greedy, be fearful. When people are greedy, be fearful. So I hope this doesn't mean that like a broad market correction is coming. But I sense it could be. I sense it could be. again, this is not advice, but I think if you do your research and you do your due diligence, that you can find the right investments and you can do well in the stock market or crypto, regardless of the weather. But you just can't catch on to these hype trains. You can't catch on to these hype trains. You will get killed. Don't try to pull what this kid pulled, or don't buy something just because it's hot and everyone else is getting in on it and you're getting FOMO. That's a real thing. That's human nature. That's why I love stock. That's why I love the markets. It's a direct, real-time, instantaneous mirror to human nature. And so I think the way crypto's going off, the way the stock market's going off, people are greedy. And Warren Buffett says, when people are greedy, be fearful. Got to ignore the mass hysteria. What else do we have? That's too long. This Asian guy's Trump impression is great. Let's watch.
Folks, look at this. I'm walking down the street of Chengdu in the middle of the night. Look at this. I feel so safe, tremendously safe. I can go anywhere that I want to go. What does that leave me? Serenity. I know it's a big word. A lot of people don't know about this word, but I want to use it on Chengdu. You don't know where Chengdu is. I'll tell you what. Chengdu is practically the capital of southwest of China.
Yeah.
Look at this.
We got a lot of Asians down there. Down there in Chengdu. I'm still working on it, man. I really want to have a good Trump impression. I really do. And I think I have a decent one for like a couple sentences. But then when you start talking for a long time, starts to trail off. It's just like my Conor McGregor impression, you know? It's like, oy, who the fuck is that guy? I don't know, you know? But then it's like after a sentence or two, you start to like lose the confidence. I don't know. I got a couple of things. We got a lot of with China. Yeah, this guy, he's making a fucking mess of himself, yeah? Okay. This guy made a really good video about the Bengals. Okay, we're just free flowing here. I got a lot of stuff, and I realize we are at 56 minutes, so I'm torn between letting it ride and like letting you guys out of here. But let's watch this video. Okay, let's just stay.
A lot of people talking about the Bengals season right now, 4-7, gloom and doom. Well, I'm just talking from a 38-year-old man, been a Bengals fan my whole life, and I'm not gonna let this team hurt me anymore. And
real
I
shit.
Choose to have a silver linings playbook perspective. I'm finding the joy in whatever's going on. And I'll tell you right now, just from one creative to another, Bengals, the way that you're losing games is some of the most creative shit I've ever seen in my life.
Yep.
Like, you're taking losing to an art form that I don't think people are appreciating. I never even knew you could lose games like this. If you told me that there was a game where we didn't punt the ball at all, and we were going to lose on primetime to a rookie quarterback, and he was quarterbacking a team named the Washington Commanders, I'd be like, you bullshit. Yeah, I gotta watch that. I gotta get eyes on that to even prove that that's real. Are you kidding me? Like, if you told me that there was two games we played against the same team, and in that game we threw 9 touchdowns, and one of our receivers had 260 receiving yards, and we lost both those games, I'd look at you and say, you serious, Clark? You bullshit?
I'm serious.
I gotta watch that shit. I can't even believe it if I don't see it. So what y'all doing is high art, is what's going on. Because in 2 weeks, we're going to come back from the bye, and we got the Steelers. And if I told you that we were going to lose that game, you know damn well you're going to still watch that game.
Yep.
Because the way they're going to lose is going to be some shit you never even heard of in your life.
That's right.
The Steelers are going to have negative rushing yards. Somehow, we're going to still catch them out.
That's right.
So Bengals, respect where it's due. Y'all keep doing your thing. It's high art losing.
High art losing, dude. And that's, I mean, the reason I showed this clip is because it's a perfect synopsis of what's going on with this Bengals season. The Bengals play the worst half of football I've seen in a long time against LA Chargers in the first half of that game on Sunday night. I turn it off. I'm done with this team. I'm done. I'm done investing emotionally into this team. And then I started to get some score alerts from ESPN. 27-13. 27-20. Okay, now it's a one possession game. I got to tune back in. I'm back invested. 27-27. We're here. We're turning our season around before our eyes. But I still had this little voice in my head that told me I'm still going to lose this fucking game. I should bet the damn Chargers right now. Because I know in my heart that these guys, they're going to find a way to lose. And that's exactly what they did. Evan McPherson, probably one of the worst kickers in the league right now, chumming it up with folks on the sideline with folks on the other team after the game. Chumming it up. Doesn't seem to have an ounce of remorse. They asked Joe Burrow, do you have any words for Evan McPherson? And he said, or what would you say to Evan McPherson? Or what did you say to Evan McPherson? And Joe Burrow just looks with a despondent stare. Nothing. Everybody's pissed in there, man. Except Evan McPherson. And he got so much praise. He got so much praise during that Super Bowl run. I don't know if that's worn off for him yet. I really don't. This team, you know, I saw a video of Mike Brown up in the suite. And apparently he's got another daughter or a daughter-in-law named Elizabeth Blackburn, I think. Probably a daughter-in-law. I don't know. But you see her frantically like scrambling around the press box or the suite. And then you see Mike Brown's old, decrepit, crusty ass, complacent ass sitting there like this. Doing nothing. Like he always fucking does. You guys are going to get me on a damn... I'm going to get myself on a damn tangent again. I'm genuinely in the place where... For now, I want to be done supporting this organization because I feel like they don't give a fuck about my support. They're just going to collect that ownership stake at the end of the year. They're just going to collect that money from the TV deals. I wonder if they even care about having butts in seats. You know, it's a revenue stream, but they're still going to get their ownership stake from the league at the end of the year. They're still going to get some TV deals as long as they got Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase lighting up the scoreboard. It's like, what incentive do they have to change? You can't fire an owner unless you're the Green Bay Packers and you got shareholders and executive board. You can't fire the owner. I hope that anybody watching this podcast who's also a supporter of the Cincinnati Bengals may stand with me in this sentiment. That we might not see real change in this Bengals organization until some of us step away and some of us stop paying our hard-earned dollars to go watch this team. I don't have anything in it. I haven't bet on sports. I haven't bet on the NFL for weeks. I don't have season tickets. I have friends that have Bengals season tickets. I tell them, I'm like, if I were you, I'd be furious. Because they got money invested in this team, hard-earned money. And we watch these guys lose in the most insurmountable ways. You take about 6 to 8 plays in the season and make them go the Bengals' way. You're looking at a team that might be 8-3 or 7-4 instead of 4-7. They find this guy summed it up beautifully. These Bengals, they find the most creative ways to lose in a game, aside from any team I've ever seen in my life watching sports. And I think the front office ineptitude, I think the questions about the staff, I think it's all just coming crumbling down, man, before our eyes. Because we got the best quarterback in the NFL statistically. We got the best receiver in the NFL statistically. A triple crown receiver And then Joe Burrow's leading in touchdown passes. I think he's leading in touchdown to interceptions ratio. I think he's leading in passing yards. I think he's leading in one other major category that's eluding me right now. And then you got the best pass rusher in the NFL, the sack leader in the NFL on the other side of the ball in Trey Hendrickson, and nobody else to help him. You got the best quarterback, you got the best receiver, and you got the best pass rusher, and you're 4-7. That's on the front office. And how do you, as a fan, how do you inspire change in an organization? Well, my buddy who's a season ticket holder asked me that. He said, like, what would you do? And I said, I'd go woke and protest outside the damn stadium until Mike Brown stepped down. It's gotten to that point with this organization. And the reason it's so painful is because this season, this Bengals season, is just a microcosm of what my 28-year life as a Cincinnati sports fan, not just the Bengals, the Reds too, has been like. It's a microcosm of what life as a Cincinnati sports fan is. And I think the city of Cincinnati just has to realize that this is like a toxic, like abusive relationship. And the best thing for us to do might just be to step away. I might get flack for that. Like if I clipped that and put it on social media, I'd probably have some Bengals fans on X telling me, no, like we got to support this team through thick and thin. That's how we get better. That's what I've fucking done for 28 years, man. And nothing changes. So I'm getting to a point where I'm sure I'll still watch, but I hope I don't. I hope I don't. And I hope this team proves me wrong and they win out and they go to the playoffs and then they make a magical playoff run and maybe go get a Super Bowl. But to me, that is delusion right now based on what I've seen from this Bengals team. It's delusion. You can't tell me in the wildest of dreams that you have the best quarterback in the league in every statistical category, a triple crown receiver and the best pass rusher in the league, sack leader in the league, Trey Hendrickson, and you're 4-7. I just can't point to anything except ineptitude across the board, ownership down. Because the success of an organization, it always, and I know this from working in sports business, the success of an organization always trickles down from the owner. Even if you're an inside sales rep like I was in Indianapolis, only laid eyes on Jim Irsay a couple times. I walked by his car every day, blue Bentley. It trickles down the culture of an organization from the owner. And Mike Brown, I don't think, is a good trickle-down guy. And so I'm getting very close to not supporting this organization anymore until massive change is made. That's my Bengals rant for the week. I'm sure I'll have a new one next week. There's that meme coin kid again. That's probably copyright. This is a good story. So Jonnu Smith, he scored his first touchdown against the Raiders. And he throws this ball. You see him throw that ball. It landed right in his oldest son's hand. Somebody got it on footage. I think people would have thought that story was fake if it wasn't on tape. Also, that Miami Dolphins stadium I went last Christmas for Dolphins Cowboys was impossible to get out of. That Hard Rock Stadium in Miami Gardens, Florida, there's like a single file line walking out of that joint. I'm not even exaggerating. It's like 65,000 people. It's like a single file line walking out of there. It's like one way to walk out of there. So it takes about an hour, hour and a half to walk out of the stadium. It took us that long to where we were parked. Okay. At least 90 minutes to walk out of there. From seat to highway, It took us about 2.5-3 hours to get from our seat at the end of the game to the highway where there's like no traffic. The traffic's miserable because like this stadium is literally like in a neighborhood. It's in a neighborhood. I'm sure people that live there make racks off parking if they have some land. I mean, that stadium is impossible to get out of. It was a blast going, but yeah, I digress. Okay. Let's rant more about the Bengals. Losses in games with 300-plus passing yards. Come on, bro. Losses in games with 300-plus passing yards, 3-plus pass touchdowns, and no interceptions. Tom Brady in his career, 2. Joe Burrow this season, 3. Ineptitude all around, my friends. Ineptitude everywhere you look other than the quarterback, wide receiver 1, and edge position. John Gruden signed a deal with Barstool. It's pretty cool. This is what I say when I'm sitting down for drinks with my Hinge date.
What's your vertical? Can you just touch your toes and show me your flexibility? How would you cover Kelsey on an option route? How would you play the technique if I said play a cloud corner? What's your background in football? What would you do if you were a defensive end? You're a left tackle. How big are your feet? Let me see your three-point stance. Do a little W drill. Get your hands out of your pockets. Act like you're throwing a bomb. Let's reevaluate. Be a fullback. I clap my hands. You start your throwing motion. Yep. Yeah, this has got to be my tight end, right?
Yeah.
But you have to be able to block the C gap. Let's see the three-point stance. Face that wall. Why banana? Nobody wants to be a guard anyways. Fire! I don't like her attitude. You are nose tackle.
Yep.
What's your vertical?
What's your vertical? I mean, so this is what I believe about the Gruden hiring at Barstool is that he knows that he probably does, and it's sad. He knows that he probably doesn't have a shot to coach in the NFL again based on what happened. He was blackballed. He was sorted out. And, you know, it's tough, but I hope he has a great career with Barstool. And, you know, we'll see what that looks like for him. Here we go. This season, the Bengals are 2-3 when scoring at least 33 points. The rest of the NFL is 39-1 in such games. WTF stats. This season is, it's laughable. It's truly laughable. And they basically got to win out in order to make the playoffs. There is a scenario where they win 5 out of 6, they go 9-8, and they make it, but it's very unlikely. You're going to have to rely on a lot of other things. Scored 33 against the Commanders, lost. Scored 38 against the Ravens the first time, lost. 17 against the Eagles, that game was just demoralizing. And then scored 34 points against the Ravens the second time, lost. How about we end the show out with a little feel-good clip here? How about that? He's like, yeah, I got him. That's so fire, dude. Fuck you, dude. That's so fire, brother. So fire, brother. Yeah, man. We're at an hour 12. We're letting it roll, baby. That's all we're going to do for this week. I hope we can start getting some more guests on. If not, we'll keep coming back doing the same thing. But, yeah, in the jar, number 44, in the books, baby. Make sure you do me a favor, do us a favor. Hit the like button if you enjoyed it. It takes half a second. Leave a comment. Let us know if there's anything we didn't cover that you'd like to hear about from us. And Most importantly, brother, hit that subscribe button because it helps us out a hell of a lot. It takes 1/10 of a millisecond. Just hit that subscribe button right below. You know what I'm saying? All right. Appreciate y'all. We'll see you next week. I love you. This is In the Jar, episode 44 with your boy, Duke. Have a good week, brothers.